Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
All right, this is Pete Poyon. I'm joined by Matt Bocklet. We're here with a great group of interviewees and Kip Turner and Sean Kerwin of the repeat national champions. Got a great interview on tap for you. Let's just quickly touch on that team, that program, that staff. What were some of your takeaways from the interview and their on the field play to this point?
Yeah, you'll have to excuse me. I am fresh out of getting a filling at the dentist. I can only feel half my face right now, so I'm trying my best. Just let me know if I sound a little off or if I'm biting my tongue or something. But it was great interviewing Coach Kerwin and Turner. Clearly a lot of chemistry between the two of them, as well as their coaching staff as a whole. And it's trickling down to the play on the field. I mean, Virginia right now, you're looking just as strong as they were last year, scoring over 17 goals a game, which is Coach Kerwin's department. Coach Turner, their goalie is a freshman, and he's saving 56%, has been very good so far this season, which is not easy for any freshman to step in like that. And they faced off over 60%, which is another under Coach Turner. So I was just extremely impressed with these guys. It seems like that they're having fun. And I think that's the big thing, like making sure your team is having fun, your coaching staff is having fun. I think that equals wins.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the two things that are severely underrated in terms of a program's ability to have success are staff continuity and the recruiting. Sean alludes to some of the recruiting that has to do with some amount of luck. Now at a place like UVA, like a lot of people are going to pursue that opportunity. But I think staff continuity kind of feeds the recruiting piece of it. I think it's very hard to get on the same page on a college staff with what you need year to year, class to class, and then the kind of young man that's going to really put your program in a position to succeed long term. And there's so many nuances to the recruiting landscape. It's not just, there's so many talented players out there, but you're evaluating character, you're evaluating ability to deal with adversity, change. A lot of these young men in high school that are their premier players in their areas and on their high school programs don't always translate. Like, you know, you know how many players can you think of that supremely talented and just like their off the field behavior or their inability to mentally deal with the stress they inevitably have to as a Division I athlete, like they just don't make it. They either can't do it from a work ethic standpoint or they just have other motivations and they get, you know, yielded off a roster pretty easily. So this staff and their ability to know exactly who they're looking for in the recruiting process, not just taking all the blue chip recruits, but finding the right ones. And then, you know, being able to build off of one another and not having to spend as much time talking about this stuff is huge. So, you know, in terms of the execution on the field, I think Kerwin's development has been the most interesting aspect of it all, you know, from D3 coach. We touched on this in the interview. D3 coach scoring a million goals a game, playing this hectic style, and then, you know, transitioning to Brown, really continuing to do that and going to a Final Four and a national championship game, and maybe the most fun team I've ever watched. And then taking that a step further and adjusting in a way where pace is not as important, but they're still putting pressure on defenses consistently. And with the players they have, that's the genius in the whole thing, I think, is the simplicity in what they do and how that's led to two championships back to back. And now, you know, a number two seeding, which I'm not sure about. How are they number two in the rankings right now? They're undefeated.
Yeah, I mean, if you're undefeated and you're the defending national champs, you should be the number one team in the country until you get dethroned. So I have them at number one, especially the way they've looked and some of their impressive wins right now. Maryland's certainly a very good team, so you could argue for either of them. But I the one thing I took away from Coach Kerwin, I thought was pretty cool. He said, we're always looking to apply pressure on the defense, whether it's 6-on-6, transition games, subbing. That's certainly something that stuck out in my mind. when thinking about my high school team as we just started our first week of the season. So that's something I certainly want to try to emulate a little bit there. And with the recruiting, they're both very happy where they are, and they're two guys that can end up coaching, becoming head coaches somewhere else. But they're at a school where they can get the players in early, they're the top ranked guys, and then they can wait and sit and see how players develop the summer going into their senior year and still get those types of players, whether they're switching from a different school. Yeah, they're going to steal some guys from you when you were at Marquette, and as they should. That's the, you know, that's part of the game. And so it's impressive. And one thing that stuck out as well was they both said if they're head coaches, they want to be at a school that takes pride in their academics. And I think that helps with those risks with players. You have guys that are not only taking care of business on the field, but in the classroom. And I think when you're recruiting players like that to high-end educations, I think there's going to be some less risks out there. That's not always the case, but that's certainly something that I was impressed by that they both were thinking about. As the season's now carrying along, and we've seen some upsets, or I guess there's not really many upsets early in the season as you're still learning about teams. Is there any squads out there that are sticking out to you as a strong team early on in this season?
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen with all these teams, right? It's the ability to endure throughout the course of the season. And I think that was a point made on another podcast, actually, and I really agree with it. But I would say Princeton is a team that I watch, and they were playing Binghamton. I watched some of the Maryland game, but not all of it, but they were playing Binghamton, and it wasn't close, but some of the things that you see and what they're doing from an identity standpoint, I think will help them. I thought offensively their ball movement was phenomenal. I think it's as good as I've seen. Where I think you're starting to see teams take a step back and really just try to exploit matchups right now, especially early on, as opposed to relying on that ball movement piece. And I think, you know, they don't have that one guy, that Michael Sowers. And I think it's very clear that they've sent the message, we need to move the ball consistently. They're attacking from a bunch of different spots. And I was really impressed. And I think Binghamton's a team. I mean, Princeton took care of that game really easily, but Binghamton did not look bad. And I think they're a team that's going to fight in the America East like they always do. And it's always a scrappy group. So I thought that was an impressive win. Defensively, I thought they were swarming double teams. They were super aggressive. They were setting a perimeter. So I was pretty impressed with Princeton. You know, I think there's three games in, though. So we'll see. But I think, you know, the NEC, you know, I'm going to go back. Hobart's doing a good job. St. Joe's is doing a great job. Taylor Ray, I think, is one of the best coaches in the game. I think that's a team that, you know, beats Penn State. And those guys are big, physical, and athletic. So I think you're seeing a conference in them and the Southern Conference that are doing some really good things. How about from your standpoint?
Well, you forgot to mention when talking about Princeton, their goalie, Eric Peters. He's been outstanding so far this year. He's a Colorado boy who I actually got to start coaching when he was in eighth grade. And then he went off to a rival high school. But he was on that team that Asher Nolting in our first interview had mentioned, that really strong Colorado, Team Colorado squad that he loved playing on. Eric Peters was that goalie.
Ace Billings, so he's too? Really,
what's that?
Ace Billings, too, right? Is that?
Pace Billings as well. Yeah.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, so that was a heck of a squad. But my team right now is Rutgers, 5-0 with some impressive wins. I like what they're doing. And they graduated a lot of guys, and they just turned around and they're still getting it done. So early on, they're looking really strong. Michigan also 5-0. But you informed me right before we started this interview, they're currently losing to Marquette. But it's early in that game. But Rutgers, I think, is a strong team. I think the Big Ten just looks really strong. Even Maryland, as we know, ranked number one right now, has been as impressive as Virginia. I would also say when you're counting out Penn State, when they were looking like they were struggling early on, they came out and beat number six Yale. So I think the Big Ten right now, top to bottom, is a very strong conference. So excited to continue to watch that and see who comes out on top.
Yeah, I'm not putting as much stock in that game. I think everyone looked at it and were like, oh, Penn State's rebounded. I think they're going to be good, like the whole Big Ten is every single year. How good, I think, remains to be seen. You know, I think you have a young team. I think they're going to be hot and cold. Ohio State, I mean, they've done an excellent job so far. I think in terms of the X's and O's, like how organized they are in their big little set, their invert, the spacing off ball, the way that they're playing right now is pretty impressive this early in the year. Obviously, it helps with Myers kind of quarterbacking things behind the cage. I think anybody that has that premier guy, North Carolina's, they're struggling a little bit. I mean, when you watch them play, Chris Gray is doing some pretty incredible things on a possession to possession basis, not even game to game. Like you see something that he does every single time. And he's not really forcing it either, which is the most impressive part. But as a group, they have a lot to figure out. And it's not just because they lost to Ohio State. I think that that's fine. That's going to happen. But you know, in their subsequent games, I don't see the overly athletic group that we would expect. But anyway, I'm fired up to get this interview out there and have these people learn a thing or two about the way that the UVA coaching staff is constructed and their roles and their vision for the program and just their evolution as a staff. It's pretty fascinating.
Yep. And I really like having two guests on at the same time, the chemistry between them that you see. So hopefully that's something we can continue with in the future.
Enjoy this interview.
All right. We are here with UVA assistant coaches Kip Turner and Sean Kerwin. I am going to read through some bios right now about these two guys that a lot of people in the lacrosse world should already know. Starting with Kip, all right, as a player, attended the University of Virginia, where he won a national championship in 2006. If you had the privilege of watching that team play live, arguably the best college team of all time, Kip was also a multi-time All-American goalie, went on to have a great professional career, was a two-time champion with the Bayhawks, I believe 2012 and 2013, was also the assistant coach at Brown before heading to Virginia for five seasons, now in his sixth year at UVA, and UVA obviously coming off back-to-back national championships. Sean Kerwin, all right, also a national champion as a player, playing Division III at Tufts, where he is the school's all-time leading scorer in goals, and then after his playing career, hopped on as an assistant coach and on that staff, won a national championship as an assistant there. I believe that was 2014, all right, before moving on to Brown and now with the University of Virginia and obviously as well winning back-to-back national championships. So both these guys, very rare, both of you winning championships as players at your alma mater and also winning championships as assistant coaches at your alma mater. So Kip, we'll get started with you. All right. Which one feels better? Do you have a favorite, winning a championship as a player or helping your program, your alma mater, win one as a coach?
It's funny you ask. First of all, thanks for having us on. This is awesome to reconnect with you two and, you know, have Sean here as well. It's kind of cool. I've been asked that question often, and the answer I always give is it's the one as a coach. And the reason is it's so special to see, to have the guys like feel what I felt like when it happened. Right. So like you've been through it and just in that moment, you're like, man, I just feel so like lucky to see these guys go through it. And, you know, you want it so badly for them. So I have to say as a coach,
Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Kip. I think for me, it's you kind of, you know, you're an 18 to 22 year old when you win it. Like, you know, everyone always tells you to like to cherish your college years. You're going to take them for granted. You're always going to, you know, want to go back there. And, you know, it's true. Like I felt like that one as a player was almost taken for granted, you know, and to then come back and realize from the other side of things and just how hard it is to get there and to get it over that hump really makes it special. So, I mean, they're all unbelievable, but yeah, you definitely, you know, when you're that age, I think you take a lot of things for granted. And I think that's just another thing that I did personally.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I think, you know, especially as coaches, you guys move so fast from one season to the next. And you guys have had a ton of success, obviously, through the last 2 years. But there's been a ton of other things going on with COVID. And normally it's hard to just process kind of the success that you have or the failures that you have and what you need to do or change. And I think probably even a little bit harder for you guys at going through it right now. But probably a pretty cool blessing and something you can share with your kids as they grow up and get older and probably become even more special to you as you get older. So that's really cool. I think one thing that, you know, the reason Bocklet and I are doing this podcast is to hear from guys that, you know, aren't doing the post game interviews and aren't talked to all the time. Now the spotlight is on the UVA program as a whole. And Lars is, you know, on a mic consistently and people are hearing from him, but we're excited to hear from the two of you guys and get your perspective. And I think that the first thing that we want to hear about is obviously on a coaching staff, you have execution roles, you know, what you're in charge of from an execution standpoint. But taking that a step further, the personalities and staff continuity being so important to a team's success. You guys have obviously had that for a ton of time. You guys aren't two guys that look and say the grass is greener somewhere else. You've been together at Brown. Now you're UVA. Can you give us a quick rundown of from an execution standpoint, what your guys' roles are on the staff, what Coach Tiffany kind of takes care of, and then, you know, maybe dig in even a little bit deeper to the personalities that you guys have and your role within the guys and their development, not just from a on the field standpoint, but their development as human beings.
Yeah, I'll start just with, you know, my personal, what I do is like, I just kind of work with those specialists, man. I hang out with the weirdos, as some people would like to say, as the goalies and the face-off dudes. And I love every second of it. I love that personal touch, like the personal relationships with those guys. And I think it's so different, but it's also just so much fun. But I mean, I help Sean with the offense. I mean, it's his offense, but I mean, I just kind of like, you know, he'll like draw up a play on the whiteboard. He's like, what do you think? I'm like, well, you're smarter than I am and you like it. So I like it. Yeah. It looks great. Yeah. It looks phenomenal. But it's like, and we collaborate a ton on strategy and a ton on like practice planning and a ton on that type of stuff. But yeah, and I mean, I do like clearing and I'll like do the riding a little bit with Lars, especially as the season goes on. But, you know, it's a big collaborative effort for all of us, especially with all the rest of the stuff. But yeah, I'll let Sean kind of elaborate.
Before Sean goes, I'm going to jump in here real quick. I appreciate the humble approach to it, but like the difference in having a good goalie coach makes a significant difference. And you guys have obviously had really good goalies and there's a reason for that. And also face-off guys. So, you know, for the listeners, Kip was, you know, as we were getting on this interview, he was hanging out eating dinner with the guys at the dining hall. And I feel like getting some experience as a coach, like that's where the real development happens, those relationships. And so I'd imagine that you're a really fun guy to lean on and somebody that these guys can talk with and just learn from and develop as human beings. And again, I think that's probably the more important piece than aside from the execution. But Sean, go ahead and jump in there.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just, you know, I'm thankful enough to, you know, have a boss and Lars to let me kind of run the offense and do what I like want to do and you know, do things the way that I've always kind of grown up believing in. But at the same time, like Kip saying, everything's so collaborative. It's one of the coolest things about working for Lars is how we're all in it together. Like he is definitely the you know, the head coach and coaches the defense. But I mean, we sit in his office constantly and we're talking through everything from the depth chart to who's playing on game day, to what we're wearing, what we're eating, when we're leaving, you know, and he truly wants that feedback in our opinions. And it's not just Kip and I, it's our volunteer assistant, Cooper Ferson, who is a player here. So it's really a cool environment. And you're right, the continuity of our staff allows us to just continue to get stronger and stronger. You know, and so for us to be together for this long These meetings aren't nearly as long as they used to be because we're kind of always on the same page, you know, and it's, you know, when Kip and I share an office, it's, you know, a lot of, you know, not to sound cliche, but like finishing each other's sentences. We're usually on the same beat, you know, and we're like that as a staff as well in total, you know, and of course I'm going to booch him up just a little bit more. I mean, we are as lucky as we can be to have somebody to lock down those positional, those specialty positions, right? I mean, usually in a Division I program, that's a, one of those roles is to a volunteer, and volunteers are a very finicky position where, you know, you're going to have a guy there for one, maybe 2 years, and then you're going to have to train somebody new. So for us to have somebody like Kip to just completely take that out of the equation and lock it down, not only that, but have, you know, very successful units there. It allows Lars to focus on the defense, allows me to focus on the offense, because it's just a whole phase of the game that that Kip owns. So, you know, when you throw that into the mix as well, so it allows us as staff to really function at what we think is a high level.
And to touch on that a little bit, Kip, you know, everyone says goalies and faceoff guys are the strange ones, and it seems to only be continuing and getting worse every year with what's going on there. And I think faceoff guys are getting, you know, even a little bit more strange than goalies. So I think you're in a good spot there. How much of in game is like counters and X's and O's, or how much of it are you just focusing on the mental with these guys? You know, you have two of the best, and now you have what, a freshman in goal who has come out and shown that he is a heck of a player already. How much of it is just you focusing on the mental with these guys in games, or actually talking strategy and what the other guys or shooters are doing?
That's a really good question, actually. And it varies, right? So like some days I feel like I'm a therapist, and then some days I feel like I'm a coach, which is cool. Like that's the fun part of the job. Like some days it's like, all right, maybe we're getting beat up at the X in a certain spot, and like because of something, or because of wing play, or because of, and it's like you got to make adjustments, and you got to, you know, tell them to swallow their pride and do something different, and you got to give them that heads up because, you know, what you're seeing, you know, is right. But man, the best days, in my opinion, are the days I'm the therapist, because you can actually see in their eyes. You're like, I try to coach that in the fall, and I try to coach that a little in the spring, like preseason. And, you know, you try to say the right things, right? But, you know, when the stuff hits the fan and it's game day and something's going wrong, that's where you're just like, you got to be, you know, simple things, right? Like fall back on your training. Hey, the next shot's the most important shot, or like little things like that. And, you know, I often take the guys to the side during timeouts and give them extra whistles, or and be like, listen, this is our move now. Like, this is what we're going to do, or give the goalie shots on the side. And it's just getting those extra reps in while talking with them, and just keeping that positive attitude even when they're down, I think is that's kind of the most important part of my job in some ways, just making sure they're still present and still all there in some ways. So, but again, I love that part of it, right? That's the fun of it.
Absolutely.
Spoken like a true goalie.
Yeah. And this next question is coming from me as a coach, because I'm just genuinely need to know what the secret sauce is, what the formula is. You hear it all the time, right? The most cliche thing in lacrosse, ground balls win games, right? You hear it. But then you go out there, I always find myself yelling at the guys, why aren't we getting these ground balls? We got to get the ground balls. We need possession. What are you guys doing that's different, that's working? You've consistently led the Division I lacrosse in ground balls. Every season you see it in the stats. And even looking at your bios, it's on your bios. You rarely see that under a coach's bio. Helped lead UVA to having the number one ground ball team in the nation. What is there an approach, a practice plan, a segment of practice that gets devoted just to ground balls? Or what do you think about that you guys are doing that really gets you in that place that you guys are winning the ground ball battle consistently?
Yeah, I think it's 1,000% of mentality over anything. Our guys take a ton of pride in that statistic. It's kind of taken on its own life of its own. where thankfully it's something that like we don't have to necessarily prod them to have that kind of hungry dog mentality when that ball's on the ground. Like it's something that's so ingrained in our program, even before we got here as a staff. But, you know, and again, we have a couple drills that we'll do. It's honestly, it's a lot of things that are very physical and you kind of hold your breath as a coach because guys are truly getting after it and fighting and clawing for those ground balls. There's no secret non-contact special sauce drill that you can do. At the end of the day, it's the nitty gritty. It's taking pride in doing it and then applying it both on the practice field and the game. But it starts with just that mentality of that, you know, there's a ball on the ground and it's you and I, I'm going to pick it up. And it can be, for us, it can be that simple as that kind of reverberates through our program.
Kip, two follow-ups to that. Have you guys had a moment where you like, oh my God, I can't believe we did a physical ground ball drill and now that guy's hurt and questioning, like, should we continue to do that? Number one. And number two, how much time do you allocate to not just a face-off skill position, but like the wing play involved? Like, what's that look like on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis?
So there was a drill and it happened to be my drill. I can talk about it. So now you mentioned it. So I'm going.
I saw Sean start to smile and I was like, oh,
you know, I got one. You know, it was it's a beautiful day in I think April and white ball, white line, you know, somebody might have stepped on a ball and he might have been really important to Sean's offense. And unfortunately, you know, we had a bum ankle because of a ground ball drill, unfortunately, and it was my drill. So I take full responsibility, but we ended up doing okay that year. So it's okay. But I think I don't think there's been really too many injuries caused by these drills. There's been definitely bumps and bruises. Definitely guys get hit hard, but I honestly think like, if you know, you're an 18 to 22 year old kid in college, you love these drills. Yeah. Right? That's the time where you can get after it. And it's like, you know, you're in tight spaces with your other brothers on your team and you're getting fired up over some ground balls. Like, what's better than that? Yeah. So I think that's the part of it that's really fun. And to answer the second part of your question is on Tuesdays and on Thursdays particularly. So Tuesdays we call it face-off live wings. So we do some just, you know, face-offs with live wings. So it's a station. So everybody rolls through. And then on Thursday in particular, we try to get those specific wing guys with me that are actually going to take wings on Saturday. And we kind of walk through the game plan of how we're going to attack, the opponent on that Thursday. It's a little bit lighter. You know, sometimes it's like 75% live, but it's not 100%. But I think those reps are really meaningful and it's not long. It's 8 minutes or something like that. And we get some good work done there. So I think years ago, we started doing it at Brown and we just really started saying, all right, face-offs guys should not just be on the side the entire practice and just, you know, doing clamps or whatever they're doing. Like we need to get them in the mix, you know, with their other teammates and getting a live ground ball drill out of it and getting reps that way. It really helps. It helps the camaraderie of the team. It helps the face-off guys feel important. And I think doing that has just ever since the face-off game for whatever team I've been coaching has been elevated because of it. So I feel like ever since we started doing those live wing work, it's been great. And the other thing I'll add is our face-off guys are not just face-off guys. And I tell them that all the time. I'm like, you're not just a FOGO. So don't act like you're going to sit on the side all practice. You are actually going to get in the mix. You're going to do the drills. You're going to play defense. You're going to play offense. And the way we design our practices, there's a lot of transition-based stuff. Sean bought small ball with him from Tufts. And all these little things just help their skills so much. So they're not just, if you're not good at the clamp, it doesn't mean you're a bad face-off guy. So that's why we want that.
Yeah, man, that's great clarity for, you know, coaches across the country at every level to kind of understand how important that aspect of the game is and the preparation that goes into it. You just, you know, a lot of coaches, I think, cross their fingers and hope that it goes their way. And the fact that there is a strategy there is an important piece. And there's a lot to take from that. So I saw LaSalle, like he was like inverting last game against High Point. I was like, I wonder if Kerwin's like, just like, oh God, get him off the field, or like, what are we doing here? But I know he's created a ton of offense for you. And I know you guys do a ton of awesome stuff with, you know, defense to offense and playing the substitution games. And we'll get to that. But with this next question, but very clear that your faceoff guys are not just faceoff guys. And it, I'm sure it does excite them. It's a really cool aspect of the way you guys do things. So Sean, I'll switch over to you here. You guys have now been together at Brown and UVA, different personnel, a lot of talent, but different players at Brown going to, and then going into UVA and walking into a roster that you guys, you know, just inherited. And I'm interested to see get your perspective on the way that you guys have changed philosophically. So, you know, you run that Brown early offense stuff where you got a long pull dive into the crease is a real option, not just occupying a defender. You got great action ball side. You got great action backside. All three guys are running down the field looking to score. And you guys created a ton of offense through that segment and throughout substitution. And then, you know, maybe your 6-on-6 was almost secondary to that piece. Now, that reputation and that innovation is kind of stuck with you. And from my opinion, you're obviously, you know, one of the best offensive coordinators. So I, you know, I was studying your guys' film consistently, and you know, now at UVA, I see you're doing a lot of big little, and you're playing a little bit more methodical, and the pace isn't, I wouldn't say it's not high because you guys play with pace, but it's not as it's not a requirement to score in that early offense. You're not putting as much of an emphasis on it. It doesn't seem like, correct me if I'm wrong, but how is your style philosophically as a staff gone from, you know, you come in from Tufts, you implement this new system, your Brown guys learn it. Now you're at UVA and maybe playing a little bit slower and knowing that we have pieces that we can score at any moment. We just need to make sure that they're running this stuff correctly and the spacing is good. And let's rely on that piece a little bit more. Is that an accurate assumption? Just walk us through that progression.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, I want to just go back to that clip of Pete Osala inverting. If you can see me in that clip, I'm screaming at him to dodge. I'm telling him to go because there's about 7 seconds Love left. It. And, you know, he's going to win that matchup against a faceoff guy, you know, 9 times out of 10. So, yeah. No, Petey's a beast. He's such a fun weapon to have in everything that we do. But yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, the one thing that I really took from playing and then coaching at Tufts is just the idea of making defenses uncomfortable and applying pressure in every phase and every second of a game. And so, you know, by doing that, it's kind of in some ways broken it down into, you know, certain phases of the game. You have your traditional transition, which at Tufts was at where we were at our best, you know, and then when you take that to Brown, you know, it was certainly a strength of ours. But then you started seeing the sub game go into play and leaving guys on and letting them stay and play and doing that. And then you're right, you know, in some ways our depth at Brown wasn't where necessarily it was at a place like Virginia, where, you know, playing that early offense and keeping a pole or a D midi on the field preserved one of your top six guys. You know, it's we weren't that deep where, you know, the more we can get away with keep rolling out our top six and who was fresh. We felt like it really put us at an advantage. And then, you know, fast forward to a place like Virginia where you're right. I mean, you know, we're surrounded by talent every day. It's one of the best parts of our job is the guys we get to work with are truly, truly phenomenal lacrosse players. So there was, you know, this feeling of like, we don't need to force things in those two phases. Now, all three phases are part of all three programs, right? You know, we would play 6v6 at Tufts. We would do our offense, you know, at Virginia. It's, you know, it's, they're all part of it. It's just a matter of like where your team's at their best. What's going to help you, you know, put up the most goals and win the most games. And so for here at Virginia, it's certainly still all three phases are such a huge part of our identity and what we do. We just know that, you know, those first two, it's not the end all be all. We can continue to play out and, you know, we've really grown as a group in 6v6. But you know, if you go watch Brown now, you go watch Tufts now, it's all the same, right? There's, you know, just so many phases of this game that you can apply pressure on an opponent. And that's the one thing that I have taken with me wherever we go is that, you know, when you're playing us, my goal is try to make you as uncomfortable as possible. And our guys really gravitate towards that. And so, you know, our, you know, you watch us, you know, this year, it's the same thing. We're going to try to attack and transition any chance we get, you know, and then we're going to try to see what we can get out of the sub game. And then if we don't get either of those, you know, we're going to try to break you down 6v6. And the whole thought is that if we can blend those three together, so you don't have a chance to catch your breath, we feel like we have a good advantage of getting a great opportunity to put the ball in the net.
Well, I commend you, man. It's been fun to watch. I mean, at all stops. And I would be lying to you if I didn't think, like, you know, I remember talking to Kip and you were getting hired at Brown and he's like, we got this guy coming and he's going to really do some interesting things. I'm like, how interesting can it get? Like, you know, well, you showed how interesting it can get. And it's been fun to watch. So well done. It's been a pleasure to continue to see your development and see your offenses continue to score a ton of goals. Did Lars lose his mind in year one? Like getting used to that pace and being like, oh my God, we're like turning the ball over and maybe you weren't as polished and the ball's coming back the other way. And like, this is a track meet. I'm not used to this. Like, was there any of that? Like the growing pains involved?
So I don't know if Kip remembers this, but it was like leading up to our first game against Quinnipiac. And I kind of sat Kip and Lars down. I was like, I just want you guys to know, like, there's times where this can look very ugly, you know, when the ball's not bouncing your way and you're playing long periods of defense. Like if we're going to do it, like we got to make sure we go all in doing it. And, you know, and don't go down by a couple or have a couple possessions and then hit the abort button. Like we got to be all in if we're going to do it this way. And sure enough, could it be that game? First 5 minutes of the game, super sloppy, ball's not bouncing our way. And then all of a sudden things started to click. And so it was kind of cool to see that foreshadowing. But yeah, I don't know if Kip, if you remember that, but I vividly remember sitting in that office being like, all right, like, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. But just so you know, there's going to be times where you're not going to like what you see out there.
Yeah, I vividly remember that because I'm like, okay, I guess I'm hopping aboard this like brand new wild roller coaster. And
yeah,
this is gonna suck for the box coach. I was just like, it is going to tough. And it is tough for the box coach, especially in the frenetic pace at Brown that we had. Man, it was nuts.
And with that and playing at that pace and learning from coaches that have done that, whether you were players playing at that pace or now becoming assistant coaches that had to learn to play for the likes of Dom Starja, Mike Daly, and then coach with Lars Tiffany, just to name some of these head coaches that you guys have been able to work with. And you hear it all the time. It doesn't matter whether it's football, you see the Super Bowl happens and that offensive coordinator from the Rams gets hired immediately. You see it in lacrosse. We've seen Stimmel go to Marquette after Yale's championship and Baxter to Fairfield, Fife's to UVM right after UNC won, even Holman to Utah, right? It's a well-known fact that when you win a national championship or multiple in your guys' case, that you become, you know, the ones that everyone is looking for, right? You're at the top of the list for a lot of schools to become head coaches. So we kind of wanted to hear, you know, your ambitions, your young guys, right? You're both mid-30s, same age as me and Pete here. You know, you clearly have already started off your careers on an amazing trajectory and you have, you know, a long, long, you know, amount of time of lacrosse ahead of you. Kind of where do you stand in terms of your ambition and where you want to take your careers from here? I guess we'll get started with you, Kip.
Man, that's a phenomenal question, but it's one of those, like, I don't have an answer, right? Like, you got to see, like, you know, what opportunities come. And sure, would I love to be a head coach at some point in my life? Of course. Am I loving being at my alma mater and, like, you know, reliving, you know, UVA? Like, that's, that part is really cool because I'm already a fan. And, you know, I wouldn't rule anything out, but do I want to stay in the lacrosse world? Yeah, of course. So, whatever may come, you know, it'll come down the pipe and it'll happen, but I'm pretty happy where I am. And, you know, feel very, very fortunate to be here, at UVA. And, like, you know, with Lars, I've been with Lars like 11 years. It's like kind of unbelievable, but, you know, it's been a pretty good ride so far. So I'm not trying to, like, get off that roller coaster, you know?
No, keep winning national championships, but your name's been mentioned and come up in conversations just as Sean's has. Have you gone down that path and gotten a taste of, like, what that interview process is like anywhere? You don't need to name.
I have.
Yeah.
But it's few and far between for me. Maybe I'm a little less ambitious in that way, but it's just, it would have to be like the perfect spot for myself and my family. And I'm just not in a rush to do it, I guess, is my thing.
Nor should you be.
I get it. I had my brother obviously went to Virginia. My sister also played lacrosse at Virginia. I see Ken Clausen every single day. I'm pretty sure those two guys they'd all re-enroll and do their 4 years at Virginia all over again and move to Charlottesville if they could. So it makes total sense. I have to.
Ken's probably tried. Ken's probably tried. He, like, puts on a wig and comes down there like, I'm going to walk on.
He just needs to shave his mustache and nobody will know who he is.
Sean, what do you, in terms of what your ambitions and the head coaching stuff, and your name's mentioned for some of the stuff too. So tell us about, where your head's at there.
Yeah, I think, that is at some point the next step in this whole thing, right? But at the end of the day, like, when I got into college coaching, it was my goal. Like, I set a goal for myself to try to become an offensive coordinator for an ACC school. So in a lot of ways, I am, you know, living my dream in being here. And so there's no real rush to move on to that next step. It's like Kip saying, it's making sure it's the right fit. It's making sure it's the right time in so many factors, especially now with a family and two kids. It's, you know, there's so many factors that go into it. I've gone through the interview process. It's, you know, definitely valuable experience, but at the same time, like, continue to show up to work every day. And it's very easy to remind yourself how awesome our gig is here and how special it is to be around these guys that we get to coach every day. And knowing that where we go next, it's hard to replicate. So, you know, it's really just enjoying what we have it. And being super thankful for this opportunity. Cause again, it's what I set out to do from day one of getting into college coaching. So, it's truly a blessing to be able to do it every day.
Yeah. I can't imagine. And I'm the only guy on this talk and this conversation without a national championship ring. So the fact that you guys have won two back to back makes me super jealous. I don't blame you for not wanting to leave. I'm sure that's an incredible experience. And like I said, staff continuity being such an important piece, and I think undervalued across the landscape of college lacrosse. Like, it's hard to find a way to keep three or four guys together, like, because people do have ambitions. So credit to you guys for truly feeling that way and proving it with your track record. I'm interested in, and Matt has a recruiting question for you after this, but I'm interested in kind of, if you were to take that next step, what things about an institution would attract you to that? You know, like, what would you need to have in order to say, yeah, this is a great, not necessarily a location, but let's just say it's in the ideal location. It's exactly where you want to be, where your family wants to be. What about the institution needs to make sense? Kip, I'll start with you.
Thank you. I mean, that's a good question. It's like, I think it's such a case by case basis that it's really hard to answer, but I've always thought about, like, you know, having strong academic ties was always important to me. and I've worked at two pretty strong academic institutions. So I feel like I know a little bit how those work. But does that mean I'm not willing to try something different? No, probably not. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it just depends on like, how much do they care about lacrosse and how important is it to them? And if it's not going to be that important, I don't know if I'd want that job. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And like, you want to be successful wherever that next step is. So you want to make sure that there's some, there's some sort of plan set in place for the lacrosse program, wherever that is.
That's great.
And yeah. And yeah, to kind of piggyback off of that, like to me, it's like, there's just gotta be a roadmap towards success. And you know, the program doesn't have to be successful when you inherit it, you know, but you gotta have a good feeling about like, okay, it's supported, or, hey, you know, I can recruit here. You know, it's clear that they care. You know, you just want to have that feeling of like, all right, like, you know, if we go, it's going to take some hard work, but at the end of the day, like if we put in the work, we're going to get rewarded for our efforts, you know? And so that's such a huge piece. It seems kind of, you know, a simple thought to it, but you know, I do feel like that's not everywhere. Right. And so you would just want to make sure when you, you know, you leave that situation, you're presented with that opportunity, that it's a good feeling of, you know, that you, if you put in the work and the hours that we all know it takes, like you're going to be rewarded and your team is going to be rewarded for those efforts.
I will say also, like, just if you're going to, you know, put us on the spot here, I've always thought that like starting a program would be one of the coolest things ever. Like what John Torpy's done or what Joe Amplo did at Marquette. Like I always thought that was like, that's like pretty cool. It's like you get to start from scratch. You can create your own traditions and like all that stuff's really cool.
I agree with Kip completely too. That's a very, very cool opportunity that obviously doesn't pop up often in our sport.
So let's say every school is a possibility right now, a school that doesn't have a lacrosse program, to put you on the spot. All right. Which school would you pick?
Holy.
You go first, Sean.
Oh, great.
All things being equal. And we don't mean to put you on the spot, but this is such a topic that guys are like scared to talk about and tiptoe around. And it's like, you should have ambitions and you should be thinking about this stuff. Everybody is. So let's just get it out there. And you guys are showing your loyalty to Virginia, you know? And so it's like, let's talk about what would be attractive. Like it's a cool thing to kind of just discuss.
I think like a Wake Forest or a Clemson or some of these, you know, Southern ACC schools would just be so cool. Obviously we're biased with this league and how competitive it is and, you know, how winning kind of follows this league. But you know, it just seems like those types of schools are just so prime for our sport. So those would be kind of the first two that pop out into my brain.
Gosh, I'm like Miami.
The U.
I mean, it'd be cool. I mean,
Miami, Ohio.
No. Just like something like, I just think near the coast, somewhere warm, be pretty attractive and something that's just different from almost everywhere else.
Yeah.
Easy recruiting.
Being close to Boulder, I look at CU Boulder and that campus, that would be, and see the girls program, they started and within 3 years, they were in the top five nationally. So that would probably be my dream. And I wouldn't even have to move out of my house.
You want to take this next one or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll take this one. And this was what we will wrap up with. We want to provide hopefully some information for the high school recruits out there that are about to start their spring seasons or maybe just started or gearing up for this upcoming summer, knowing that, you know, you guys, I'm sure I haven't looked too specifically, but I'm sure you guys have already picked up a lot of the current juniors or the 2023 class that you're very excited about. But I would imagine maybe leave some of those spots open for the summertime when you're going into looking at things, and also the current sophomores as well this summer, the 24 class, which would be a big summer for them. mainly for the top guys that are getting the looks from the Virginias, the ACC schools, those types of places. So just kind of knowing that the spring season's getting rolling and you guys are not really doing a whole lot of recruiting at this time, if any at all, what's kind of your mindset going into this upcoming summer? And do you even, you know, do you care if a kid is verbally committed, or are you just going to go after the guys that you want to get for your program?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, our summer, we kind of approach it with a blank canvas. Like, you know, players they change, they develop, they continue to improve what seems like can be in the blink of an eye. So, you know, we try to go into anything that we do with an open mind and no real, try not to pigeonhole ourselves into anything. And so just trying to go in there and observe and evaluate and, you know, and just kind of see how the chips fall and not get caught up in and anything else. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what we're hearing or anything like that. It's just kind of trusting our eyes and our own evaluation. And, you know, it just seems like each summer is kind of the same thing. You kind of go in and you're ready for that whole summer and you're just kind of taking it event by event and just continuing to build, you know, a library of evaluations so that hopefully when the time comes, you feel like you are, you know, have at least a somewhat of an idea of who you like, what you like, and how they fit into your culture and your program and your school.
Yeah, I agree with Sean totally on all that. And the one thing I'll kind of add to, I guess, is you always hear like throughout the summer, like so-and-so likes this place, so-and-so likes this place. It's like all these rumors and all these things, and none of them are ever true, or so it feels, you know. It's like, so you're better off just like not listening to any of that. And so you kind of block, you want to block out the noise. And the more the longer I've been in this business, the more like you just kind of have to block the noise. You hear rumors all the time about, but until you hit that September 1st date, nothing matters. So, and obviously that's a big important day for those to be juniors. And, you know, it's just, that's kind of my take on the whole thing nowadays. Yeah. You just do your due diligence, you do your work. But until that September 1st day hits, like you just got to go recruit the best kids on that date. And Sean's also right when he says those guys that maybe we recruited last summer, it's amazing how different that class can be the following summer. You know, the best are still probably the best, but then there's all these other kids that kind of just pop out of the woodwork and you're like, whoa, who's that? And that's what's kind of cool about, you know, the ability to sort of keep watching, keep recruiting and keep an eye out for any gems popping through.
So that's great perspective from a recruit, for these kids listening and parents listening, just to stay patient and continue to develop. And you guys will keep your eyes open and find the best guys for your program. I have a two-part follow-up. Number one, there's obviously the guys that are like phenomenal lacrosse players that you guys have an opportunity to get being at Virginia and having the success that you've had. And that's kind of low-hanging fruit for you because it could be just easy. Hey, we got top 20 guys here from a talent perspective. Like, how do you make sure that you're maximizing the character and the intangibles and the things that, you know, maybe you guys take a guy that is not so obvious to everybody, just the casual fan that's watching a game and saying, hey, like that kid's not standing out a ton, but he's going to UVA. You know, and I'm not saying that happens all the time, but I'm sure it does. And then the second part to that is a young man that was committed to Marquette is now on your roster and he's a stud and he's going to be a leader for you. And the word poached was thrown around like a lot, like a couple years ago, right? Where people were pretty like, hey, don't take my guys. I'm of the opinion that you shared, Kip, where like nothing matters and verbal commitment's a verbal commitment. How many spots do you guys leave open for maybe those high character guys that are committed to a program and they get an opportunity to go to Virginia and they go? Because that was a tough loss for us, and he's going to be I would imagine that kid would be a captain for you guys at some point. And you don't need to comment on that, but like bringing in character guys, leaving the door open for those late bloomers, what's that look like?
I mean, I think we do, to be honest, like we do usually leave like that, you know, potential spot there. But at the same time, I think, you know, one of you alluded to it earlier, where you're like, all right, well, UVA committed this guy. Like, why'd they commit this guy? And maybe he's not the top 20 recruit. Like, we like multiple sport athletes. We like to, you know, recruit some position specific things. Like, and I think in the ACC, you have to have athletes. And so that's kind of a big key of ours. And maybe we just recruit an athlete and, you know, we're just hopeful in 2 years of high school, they'll develop into a big time college lacrosse player. So there is that. And, you know, you don't necessarily want all the top 20 kids. Like, that's not going to make the great team. Right. So you want a mix of different things. You want the toughness, the gritty kid, or
how do you evaluate that? Sorry to cut you off, but how do you evaluate that?
I mean, I would say ground ball play. How does he take every rep in the summer, in the heat of the 100-degree summer that we have to watch him at? Mm-hmm. What's he like on the sideline? Does he care for his teammates? And, you know, we obviously get recs from high school and club coaches, and some coaches, if they're all saying the same thing, like how amazing this kid is, like, then you know, you got our ear, you got our attention. If they're all saying the same thing and they're probably not talking to each other all the time, like, okay, maybe we got something here. So that's kind of where that recruiting piece goes and how it happens, where you get this guy that, you know, maybe people aren't like, maybe he's not the best guy, but Virginia, he's going to Virginia. So go ahead.
Yeah. We get lucky. Like, I'm not going to, you know, shy away from the fact that we're a place at Virginia where people will apply to and get in on their own and walk on. And, you know, we do a great job of giving these guys chances, but I mean, we graduated a senior last year, Kyle Kologi, who got in on his own and was a 4-year starter in our defense and such a major, major factor for us winning, you know, those two national championships. We have a 5th-year now in Jack Peel, who got in on his own, walked on, and he will be a 5-year contributor for us. He played offense as a freshman in the national championship game, you know, and so he's somebody that, you know, we continue to, you know, rely on. And we didn't have anything to do with these guys getting in, and they show up day one to try out and make the team. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. So, you know, we're also not naive to the fact that we're at a place that's attractive. It's a high academic school that people want to go to, whether lacrosse is a part of their life or not. And then they happen to be fantastic humans and fantastic lacrosse players. And so we will always give those guys a chance. You know, it's the one thing we learned when we got here. Like, there are guys that can play that, you know, we've never heard of that show up on our doorstep. We'd be foolish to kind of turn our nose to them just because we didn't recruit them. So we definitely, there's some luck involved to some of the things we do as well.
Where's it harder to get into, Tufts or UVA?
Ooh, I don't know. That's actually a good question. It's probably out of state. It's probably pretty comparable. Maybe Tufts by a little bit, but I don't know.
Just say UVA.
It's my alma mater.
So I mean, Chris Bocklet got into UVA, so I'm gonna go with Tufts.
I couldn't get into either if it wasn't for lacrosse, so I know that. So,
well, this was awesome, extremely informative. This makes me want to maybe rethink our format here, Pete. I think we got to get guys or girls that in these duos. I think you know you get the banter back and forth. People that really know each other. I really. For our first time having two guests on, I mean, this was special. This was really.
You're cool. Looking at the best synergy that's out there, though, Matt. That's the difference. True. We got a two-time repeat national championship staff. Yeah. This isn't going to be status quo. So
you should see us in the office, though. I'm telling you, like, it's like a couple, like, it's like a married couple in our office, because we actually don't have our own personal offices. So, like, we're in our each other's space all the time. And that's probably why we're such good friends, is because we just are able, you know, to bust each other out all the time too. Yeah.
You're a married couple. Who's neater?
Yeah, we spend more time with each other than our wives, for sure.
Who's neater or messier?
I'm neater.
Kip is definitely neater. Definitely.
Go ahead. Ask more questions.
All right, fellas. Thanks for taking the time. This was awesome. And we wish you the best of luck as the season progresses, and look forward to watching you guys make another run at it.
Thank you for having us on.
Awesome. Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.